Only the crew at Marketplace could connect a royal baby to international trade. But first, Glaxo's China Troubles.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. The pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline is due out with its quarterly profits calculation tomorrow with a large elephant quietly present. The company's under investigation in China for bribing doctors. Well, how common is that? Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
Chinese police allege GlaxoSmithKline bribed doctors in China with money and trips, using a tax receipt scam to hide the wrongdoing. It may sound like a most nefarious plot, but those in the know say it's par for the course in China.
It's a systemic problem. This is certainly not a GlaxoSmithKline problem.
Sean Ryan is author of The End of Cheap China. Salaries for doctors in China average less than $1,000 a month. As a result, bribes are an integral part of China's healthcare system, says Ryan.
I think foreign pharmaceutical brands are caught in a conundrum. In order for them to sell into China, they have to give bribes, because that's what the Ministry of Health and that's what hospital administrators and doctors are forcing them to do. If you don't give a bribe, you can't expand here.
Ryan suspects the government is singling out GlaxoSmithKline because it wants to put an end to the corruption in China's healthcare system, and it's easier to target foreign companies to scare the entire industry. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Now let's do the numbers. In London, the FT 100 index is up 0.25% now. The key stock index in Shanghai rose almost 2% overnight. Stock index futures for the U.S. are up across the board now. The following story is not certified organic. It's been a profitable year for makers of chemicals which kill bugs in America's cornfields. That's because one tenacious pest, the rootworm, has developed resistance to a genetically modified strain of corn. Iowa Public Radio's Joyce Russell reports.
Corn stands a foot high at Darwin Bateen's farm in Sac County, Iowa, on a breezy summer day.
Well, the one I had trouble with the rootworms is that field over there.
The rootworm he's talking about was the scourge of the cornfield for years. The insect's larvae feed on the roots of the corn, knocking the plants over row by row. Then, 10 years ago, Monsanto introduced what's called BT corn. It's genetically engineered to emit a toxin that kills the larvae.
And I didn't need insecticide. I could just use that. And so we used that and got along good.
Until they didn't. This year, the farmer applied a trusted soil insecticide, and that's what concerns the EPA. Stephen Bradbury directs the Office of Pesticide Programs at the EPA.
One of the points in our decision to register the BT toxins was that that would eliminate the need to use soil-applied corn rootworm insecticide.
Now, surveys show as many as half of Midwestern farmers are still using BT corn, but they're applying insecticide too, and that adds up. Aaron Locker is marketing director for the farm products manufacturer FMC. He says sales and profits are on the rise.
Due in part to resistance to corn rootworm.
And the gains are industry-wide. Luke Samuel is Monsanto's corn insect traits manager. He says rootworms have been a challenge in the past, and they'll be a challenge in the future.
Resistance is not a new concept in agriculture.
The EPA says Monsanto is moving in the right direction. The company introduced seed with a new toxin to confound the rootworm larvae, and they're encouraging farmers to plant corn every other year to control the infestations. With corn prices high, that's a hard sell. In Sac County, Iowa, I'm Joyce Russell for Marketplace.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
My mother used to say having a baby is always an irrational decision. The spreadsheet never makes sense if you do the numbers, but we have them and love them anyway. What about this Prince of Cambridge guy, young master third in line to the British throne? What's the spreadsheet there? The BBC's Andrew Walker joins us from London. Morning, Andrew.
Good morning, David.
There are some who might see the royal family as an expense item. The British Treasury subsidizes the royals to some extent. But there are benefits that will accrue with this birth?
Yes, there is certainly the potential for that. But in terms of this specific event, I think it's pretty clear that the impact on the economy will be positive. Having said that, it will also be rather small. Trade, in one sense, I mean, we might well expect to see more tourist arrivals. There'll also be sales of souvenirs, some of which will be bought by tourists and some of which will actually be shipped abroad. Perhaps a little bit of a boost to public confidence, some kind of feel-good factor at a time when the economy is beginning to look up a little bit anyway.
As you do the cost-benefit analysis here, which we seem to be ruthlessly doing about something as glorious as a birth, we also have to factor in what was the public holidays point?
The point here is that when we're comparing this event with previous major royal events, those were, again, major events that raised Britain's tourist profile internationally and also generated a significant amount of sales, but they were also marked by public holidays. So there was also some lost output. This time, there is no holiday, so there is no offsetting cost as a in terms of lost output in that same way, which I think is one of the reasons why it's reasonably safe to say that on balance, this will have a positive, if small, impact.
The BBC's Andrew Walker. Andrew, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
And parents are shelling out less for their kids' college. A new report today from student loan servicer Sallie Mae says parents paid $5,700 from income and savings last year compared to $8,700 3 years ago. This is because incomes aren't keeping up, the report suggests. Colleges are picking up some of the slack with more grants and scholarships, plus, make no mistake, more loans. You know what's way up? Saving money by refusing the dorm. 57% of college students are living at home or with relatives now, compared to just 43% 3 academic years ago. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.